My name is Paul Ingram. I'm a writer and former massage therapist in Vancouver, Canada. To learn more about me, go to saveyourself.ca/bio. Saveyourself.ca is a website about sensible advice for aches, pains, and injuries. I've written hundreds of self-help articles and several advanced tutorials about common pain problems, readable enough for anyone, but heavily referenced for professionals. This article is one of several audio versions of the largest and most popular articles on saveyourself.ca. To see the complete list available so far, see saveyourself.ca/audio. Does posture matter? Posture exercises and strategies for improving posture, and some reasons not to bother. Health-conscious people are haunted by the idea that they should correct their posture, and many fight a chronic, uncertain, and tedious battle against crookedness. But is it necessary? Can aches and pains be traced to poor posture in the first place? Even if they can, is it actually possible to improve posture? The characteristic ways that we sit, stand, and walk are among the strongest of all habits, with deep roots and personality. And so changing your posture may be just as difficult as quitting smoking or Timbits. It had better be worth the effort. After working as a massage therapist for many years, I became confident that poor posture is a real thing. That may sound strange to many readers. Why would anyone doubt that poor posture is a real thing? But many experts don't think the idea of poor posture has any validity or utility at all, that there's essentially no such thing. I actually tend to agree with that, insofar as everything that is real about poor posture can probably be described just as well without using the term posture at all and avoiding all of its baggage. However, I still see some value in using the idea of posture, and I think it is sometimes a factor in chronic pain, mostly later in life, and probably can also be improved in some cases with a little effort. But it's not a straightforward business, this posture stuff. There aren't many easy wins for people here, and plenty of potential to waste time and money or even get hurt. Delving deeper into the topic as a journalist, studying the scientific literature and learning more from countless readers and experts, I have developed many reasonable doubts about posture's importance. In particular, I believe that many health professionals pathologize posture, exaggerating its importance to justify costly therapy, all with good intentions, of course. This doorstopper of an article thoroughly explores some strategies for postural improvement that might be helpful to a few people, but I also explain why the idea of poor posture is mostly much ado about nothing, a problem in theory, but usually not much of one in practice. If your main issue is unexplained or stubborn aches and pains, there are probably better ways to spend your time than reading this, such as getting a nice massage or being more physically active, which trumps almost all considerations of posture. How's that for a tempting introduction? What is posture? Posture is not a position, but a dynamic pattern of reflexes, habits, and adaptive responses to anything that resists you being more or less upright and functional, such as gravity, of course, awkward working conditions, which might be unavoidable, nurses have to lift patients, or self-inflicted and correctable, like lousy ergonomics, abnormal anatomy, and athletic challenges. If you start to tip over or lose the stability you need for a task, postural reflexes kick in and engage muscles to pull you into a more or less upright and or functional position again. The specific systems that keep us upright are pretty neat and surprisingly poorly understood. Posture is also more than the sum of those parts, more than just a collection of righting and stabilizing reflexes. It's the way you live, the shape of your flexible container, the physical manifestation of your comfort zone. We habitually hold ourselves and move in ways that serve social and emotional needs, or avoid clashing with them. Posture can be submissive or dominant, happy or sad, brave or fearful, apathetic or uptight. The challenges and rewards of trying to change posture are not just musculoskeletal and can be personally profound. Patterns in people's lives and behavior that lead to trouble are usually strong. This article does not get too deep and mostly sticks to the musculoskeletal issues, but the potential profundity of posture does deserve a nod. What poor posture is not: upper cross syndrome and its ilk. The most famous poor posture is probably upper cross syndrome, or UCS. It sounds impressively technical, Named by a Czech doctor and researcher, Vladimir Janda, it is the apex of clinical storytelling about posture in therapy culture and the prototypical muscle imbalance theory. No idea about bad posture has ever been both this popular and advanced, quote-unquote. What is UCS? It's a description of a simple, common posture, head and shoulders forward mostly, with several complicated assumptions about its causes and consequences. In UCS, your muscles are like dysfunctional ship's rigging. Some are weak and loose, inhibited, while others are too strong and tight, facilitated. Viewed from the side, you can draw diagonal lines between these groups that cross. There's lower cross syndrome as well, but it's much less famous. Dr. Janda was a pioneer. He did good work with the information he had at the time, but he was probably mostly wrong about UCS. The rest of the article substantiates this in a variety of ways. Muscle imbalance theories have not done well over the last couple decades. Jason Silvernail, doctor of physical therapy, writes, "There's almost no data to support these ideas, and to my knowledge, there never has been." Research has relentlessly shown that professionals have trouble agreeing on exactly what's wrong, and the tightness of muscles doesn't seem to have much to do with their strength, or with pain, or really anything that anyone can actually work with. If certain muscles were actually weak in everyone exhibiting a certain posture, and those people tended to have certain problems, then it would make sense to try to strengthen those muscles specifically. But they aren't, and they don't, so it doesn't. Treating people as if they have UCS, with targeted stretching, strengthening, and massage, say, doesn't seem to work any better than generally getting more exercise. Nor is any of this surprising, given where the science has gone. In general, it's become clear that the behavior and condition of individual muscles is mostly trivial compared to the potent role of the central nervous system as the dictator of almost everything about both function and sensation. In short, it's not muscle imbalance that makes people slump and hurt, it's a brain thing, and UCS is an effect, not a cause, or just a fantasy. In fact, there probably is no UCS pattern at all, no cross of weak, tight muscles. There's just a common posture, plus the panoply of human aches and pains that come and go like aurora borealis, most of which still cannot be specifically explained, and probably never will be specifically explained. UCS is a good story, Dr. Janda told in the absence of good data. It was a nice idea at the time, but it has become quite obsolete. So why is this vision of poor posture still so popular? Here's Jason Silvernail again with a long explanation. It's accessible to a wide variety of practitioners. Since it involves muscular assessment, everyone from physicians to personal trainers to physical therapists, chiropractors, athletic trainers, massage therapists, and strength coaches could use this approach with their patients or clients. Both clinicians, physicians, physical therapists, chiropractors, athletic trainers, as well as fitness and service professionals, personal trainers, strength coaches, massage therapists, those with rigorous academic education at doctoral postgraduate level, those with college educations, and those with trade school or certification training. Huge numbers of different people in different fields could use this idea. It's a marketing dream. It provides a simple solution to a complex problem that leverages deeply embedded cultural ideas that are far more powerful than scientific data. That's why these cross-syndrome type things make no sense whatsoever, but are not going away anytime soon. People will be talking about this brilliant insight for another 50-odd years. And that's the end of the Silvernail quote. This is what skeptics mean when they say that there is no such thing as bad posture, and I completely agree with the spirit of that position. But there's also more to poor posture than UCS. Or perhaps I should say there's less to it. What is poor posture? My definition of poor posture is much simpler and less important than Janda's crossed syndromes, or any similar muscle imbalance model that puts on airs. I think it's just any habitual positioning that causes unnecessary strain on the body. Poor posture is simply awkward posture. A little more precisely stated now. Poor posture is an unnecessary and problematic pattern of physical responses to postural challenges. In case it's not clear already, a postural challenge is anything that makes it harder to maintain more or less upright function. The simple obvious example is lifting something heavy and awkward. The less obvious example is working with a computer with a keyboard that's a little too high. You can sit comfortably, or you can use the keyboard, but not both at the same time. So a postural challenge is anything that makes good posture harder. Sitting for hours with your knees tucked sharply under your chair is a classic example of real poor posture, a real hazard to your kneecaps, avoidable and entirely caused by a lack of awareness of how knees work. If anyone ever tells you that there's no such thing as poor posture, a popular skeptical perspective, as I've mentioned, that example is an excellent rebuttal, and there are certainly others. How much posture matters in general is another question, but for sure there is such a thing as a problem posture. What about postural laziness? That's what most people think of when they think of poor posture, thanks to the Puritans. The avoidance of postural challenges leads over time to poor postural fitness. If you avoid postural challenges enough, eventually you'll have trouble coping with them when you have to. And so we're back to the first definition. Other than just letting themselves go to pot, why would anyone respond in an ineffective way to life's postural challenges? Weakness, mood, pain, hang-ups, fatigue, fear, stress, and more. You're really off the poor posture hook, though, if your problematic responses to postural challenges simply can't be helped. For instance, an old man may walk stooped over because he has spinal stenosis and it really hurts to stand up straight. That's not poor posture. All that stooping is definitely tiresome, but it's the lesser of evils. And it's the same postural compromise that everyone with painful stenosis chooses. But for a young man, presumably without stenotic back pain, the same posture would be an unnecessary strain and certainly poor and worth fixing, if possible. Of course, for the most part, young men do not stoop like old men. Here's a nice little quote. This is a fictionalized Isaac Newton and his Cambridge roommate Daniel in Quicksilver by Neal Stephenson. Daniel watched Isaac gain a couple of inches in height as he remembered the erect posture that Puritans used to set a better example. Does posture matter? It turns out that people naturally avoid the most ineffective responses to most significant postural challenges, because Homo sapiens is naturally allergic to strain and pain. Although postural laziness might seem obviously evil, people also naturally tend to keep up their postural fitness for the things that they care about. If you like playing sports, you play them. So the problem of poor posture is generally minor and self-limiting. The worst problems are avoided naturally. The postural fitness that matters the most is taken care of almost automatically, and the issues that remain are relatively minor. That said, Homo sapiens can also be surprisingly self-defeating. In fact, this seems to be a weird feature of higher intelligence. Human beings do not always avoid unnecessary strain, and we can be surprisingly prone to do things the hard way. So we probably do make some postural mistakes and develop bad habits because we are careless, or our big brain is placing too much emphasis on some other priority, or because we don't even know that we're doing something wrong, like the knees tucked under the chair example. Fortunately, the scientific evidence strongly suggests that doing things the hard way, posturally speaking, is probably not all that harmful. Here are some interesting examples. The first one, for instance, a leg length difference, is portrayed by many therapists, especially chiropractors and massage therapists, as a serious postural problem that is pretty much guaranteed to cause pain. And yet, it's been proven that people with significant leg length differences suffer from no more back pain than anyone else. Second example, soccer athletes with large differences in the mass of their low back and hip muscles, exactly the kind of imbalance that is targeted for repair by therapists everywhere, they don't actually get hurt any more often than soccer players with more evenly distributed muscle mass and strength. And finally, third example, consider this recent scientific study of coordination exercises for the neck. It showed that the exercises had exactly the intended effect on coordination and posture, but no effect on neck pain at all. What's the point of posture exercise if it doesn't actually help people with pain problems? Maybe none. That's the point. All of this flies in the face of posturology. Posturology is the cheesy, popular term for the mostly made-up discipline of studying the relationship between posture and pain, and even diseases. Posturologists, I can barely even say that with a straight face, tend to assume their own conclusion. They just take it for granted that poor posture does cause pain, and then they look for confirmation. And so there are many, many scientific papers out there that seem to present evidence of a connection between posture and pain, but most of them suck. and posturology is mostly a slummy pseudoscientific research backwater, there may actually be something to learn if only posturology research was better quality, but most of it has to be chucked or at least taken with a huge grain of salt, particularly because it is so broadly contradicted by all this generally better evidence. And not just evidence, logic too. Posture is only one of many hypothetical factors that contribute to pain problems, and in many cases, it probably isn't contributing at all. This is obvious from a simple observation. There are a lot of people with perfectly good posture who are in terrible pain, and also many people with terrible posture and no pain. For instance, I had a truly scoliotic patient, an elderly woman with a blatant S-curve in her spine that she had had since she was a child. Despite this obvious postural stress, she suffered no worse than annoying back stiffness her whole life. Meanwhile, in my 10-year career as a massage therapist, I had a steady stream of people through my office with severe, debilitating back pain and perfectly ordinary posture. What's the difference between these patients? Another good example, a client with a pronounced torticollis, a wry neck, and even a little deformed by it. But once again, this middle-aged patient suffered from no more than irritating chronic discomfort, while many people with much more normal head posture are just about driven nuts by neck pain, including yours truly, which is why I wrote a book about neck pain and this article. There are many better documented stories like this, like the case of a serious traumatic cervical dislocation reported in the New England Journal of Medicine in 2010, notable for being mostly asymptomatic, just torticollis and stiffness, but no pain, no weakness, or altered sensation. That such a serious injury could ever have that little impact on a person is quite interesting, and puts the hazard of poor posture in some perspective. Research has shown that abnormal curvature of the cervical spine is not closely associated with neck pain, and is probably not clinically significant. For balance, there are studies that say otherwise, but mostly just crappy ones. And in any case, they don't remotely prove that abnormal curvature actually causes pain. It's an important distinction. They're associated with it, but causing is a different matter. In general, the story is the same for the low back, the other posture hotspot. For instance, you could hardly ask for a more cliched notion about posture than the idea that slouching is bad for your back. Teens slouch a lot, and they do get back pain, though much less than adults. So if posture is an important factor in back pain, it shouldn't be too hard to find a connection here. But a biggish 2011 study did not. A greater degree of slump in sitting was only weakly associated with adolescent back pain. So no smoking gun there. Physical therapists tend to make too much fuss over extremely subtle postural problems, which match up even more poorly with pain than the obvious postural problems. The popularity of such theories generally suggests to me that posture is often a therapeutic red herring. Both its importance and its fixability are routinely overestimated by professionals, and overestimated in a self-serving way. And yet, that doesn't mean that there isn't still something of interest going on. Health problems don't have to be severe to be of interest. Les Glennie, a Canadian registered massage therapist of my acquaintance, said with his tongue in his cheek, "I enjoy pathologizing posture. It gives me a sense of purpose." What are the physical risks of poor posture? Part 1. I once sat down at a bar with my wife. And no, this isn't a joke. I spent about 20 minutes leaning to my right while we ate and talked, an awkward position that got uncomfortable fast. I fidgeted for a few minutes before I realized what was going on, but it was too late. My low right back had already cramped up. It was painful for days, and a slowly fading annoyance for weeks after that. People with less vulnerability to body pain than I have, especially younger people, will not relate well to that kind of story. They might be inclined to underestimate the severity of the pain, dismiss the timing as a coincidence, or to call it a problem with vulnerability rather than a postural problem. And they might be right about that last point. More on that soon. But it is quite real for a great many people, especially older ones. Hopefully, I've already convinced you that posture isn't exactly a critical factor in everyone's musculoskeletal health, but I'm also not throwing the baby out with the bathwater, which is something that readers accuse me of several times per week, by the way. I've seen countless cases where relatively obvious and avoidable postural and ergonomic strains did seem to cause pain, and in many cases that pain was relieved easily enough just by avoiding obviously poor posture. On the other hand, most such cases actually involved only an imposed postural strain, as opposed to poor posture per se. This is a constant point of confusion, this difference between postural strain and poor posture, and it's really important that we sort it out. So that's what the next section is. Postural strain versus poor posture. Carrying a heavy backpack slung over one shoulder, that's a postural strain. It's a circumstance that makes it difficult to be comfortable, or to maintain what we probably think of as good posture. Typing incessantly is a postural strain. It's not a bad habit, it's something that some of us have to do, and it's a challenge to our bodies. There's a clear difference, but there's also a lot of overlap. A lot of so-called poor posture is just awkwardly coping with a postural strain. Many of those strains can be removed or avoided if you recognize the problem, but it's surprising how often people don't even notice a postural strain. What if someone is stubbornly unaware of an easily avoidable postural strain? Is that a posture problem? Or is it just cluelessness about ergonomics? I suppose it's probably an unholy blend of both. I recall a case of a man with a truly awful chronic upper back pain who also had a nasty computer workstation. I remember my amazement as he described it to me. He was barely aware of it being a problem. I had to tease him about it was so absurd. But once the problem was pointed out, he made several easy improvements, and that was the end of his problem. I find it hard to think of that case as a posture case. Another good example was the fiddle player who had developed terrible pain in his shoulder. Incredibly, he did not tell me that he was a serious fiddle player. He simply presented himself as a shoulder pain patient. It was only after carefully quizzing him that I discovered he was practicing the fiddle for hours every day with his shoulder intensely hunched up, as fiddlers do, and maybe he did it even more than other fiddlers. If he stopped playing, the pain would fade away over a few days. If he resumed, it would flare back up. He had been doing this for years, but didn't think to mention any of that to me. And what a terrible dilemma! A clear postural strain actually required by a beloved activity. In fact, I think it's quite likely that he didn't mention the fiddle connection because he didn't want that to be the problem, or quitting to be the solution. That guy loved playing the fiddle. So you tell me, posture problem? Ergonomics problem? Or just a fiddling problem? Ergonomics is the science of arranging or designing things for efficient use specifically to avoid postural strain. Unfortunately, ergonomics is usually interpreted unimaginatively, with the result that most people think that ergonomics is just about choosing office chairs and changing the tilt on your keyboard. Lots of things can indeed be said about office chairs and the tilt of your keyboard, but it's only the tip of the ergonomics iceberg. For some ideas about arranging a few things other than your workstation, see my article Unconventional Ergonomics. The address for that is saveyourself.ca/ergonomics. What are the physical risks of poor posture? Part 2. We live in a gravity field that never quits. Day in, day out, it pulls us unwaveringly towards the center of the earth. If we are chronically crooked, some muscle somewhere is going to have to work more than its fair share to keep us upright. All that is required to demonstrate this is to see how long you can stand leaning a few degrees to one side. Exaggerated imbalance gets uncomfortable fast, and subtle imbalance presumably gets uncomfortable slowly, for at least some people. And the discomfort often outlasts the strain. Why? No one really knows, but here's a theory. Muscle functions painlessly and well under most conditions. It's a high-performance tissue. It can get surprisingly sensitive, though, usually in fairly well-defined patches, which are popularly called muscle knots or trigger points. I've written a lot about this mysterious phenomenon, including my doubts that it's even muscular, but at any rate, it certainly is good at seeming like it. It's not clear exactly what biological conditions cause the sensitivity, and it's notoriously unpredictable. But there is one fairly reliable method of inducing trigger point pain: awkward postures, postural strain. You can provoke trigger points with a postural strain more reliably than with any other method I know of. Trigger points seem to be closely associated with a wide variety of other common pain problems. This surprisingly ordinary condition may even be the source of many of the non-arthritic aches and pains suffered by the human race, especially low back pain. If so, it could be costing civilization many millions of bucks in reduced economic productivity and an even greater but unmeasurable cost to quality of life. If poor posture contributes to the formation of knots and tired muscles, which is far from proven, but it's a reasonable theory, then this might be the chief risk of poor posture, and it might be a good idea to try to improve posture because of it. A lot of people would call this problem muscle imbalance. Why don't I call it muscle imbalance, like everyone else? Because balance has a cheesy, snake-oily connotation in healthcare. It might be a useful bit of imagery, but it's fouled by association with a lot of bogus balance-related quackery. It too strongly implies that something is wrong and in need of therapizing, probably costly therapizing. Some muscle imbalance may just be a normal, occasionally uncomfortable part of being human, like being hungry after exercising. Vulnerability versus the posture did it. If it's so easy to induce muscle sensitivity by fighting gravity and adopting awkward postures, why aren't we all in agony all the time? Lots of people live in gravity, and many people frequently have awkward postures, but never have pain problems. So why me? Why so many others? And is poor posture really the problem, or are some of us just excessively vulnerable? It's probably both, but leaning away from posture as the cause of anything. The range of asymmetry that people can tolerate is probably quite wide, highly variable, and generally narrower with age, but the average healthy person can probably easily tolerate poor posture with no problem whatsoever. And if poor posture can't really hurt a healthy person, it's not much of a demon, is it? On the other hand, more vulnerable people, people who get pain from trivial postural strain, people like me, don't have a posture problem so much as we have a pain problem, a vulnerability. The greater the vulnerability, the more it's about the vulnerability and not the posture. Awkward postures are just another thing that triggers pain, even if we are quite careful. It doesn't really seem like posture is what needs troubleshooting there. I'm a bit doubtful that anyone is wandering around in pain as they age because they were sloppy with posture in the past. I think it's more likely that some people cruise into early vulnerability to postures that weren't really a problem before, and everyone gets there eventually. The worst postures become a problem the soonest, of course, but I doubt they're the cause, just the messenger. What are the physical risks of posture? Part 3, arthritis. All tissues wear out when the stress on them exceeds their capacity to heal and adapt. Degenerative arthritis is a universal human condition. Everyone develops it eventually, to some degree. It seems like a super reasonable guess that tissues wear out unevenly where they are loaded unevenly, just like shoes wear out unevenly in proportion to how uneven your gait is. Some people develop arthritis much more quickly than others, and poor posture certainly seems like a likely cause of that. Plenty of research does confirm a logical connection between posture and arthritis. For instance, a 2012 study of knee arthritis, and knees are an ideal place to look for this, showed that people who already have arthritic knees are bigger leaners, and their gait is, quote, consistently different than people with healthy knees, and they probably weren't just walking differently because of the pain. That is, the crookedness probably caused the arthritic pain, as opposed to arthritis just making them walk crookedly. On the other hand, we have all the evidence presented earlier, and a lot more, that janky biomechanics just generally don't match up very well with chronic pain. Arthritis itself is often surprisingly painless. Again with the knee, one of the most popular theories in musculoskeletal medicine is that uneven control of the kneecap, due to abnormal anatomy and or posture, will cause the cartilage on the underside of the kneecap to degenerate painfully, which in turn causes a common kind of knee pain, patellofemoral syndrome. And yet, in fact, degeneration of that patellar cartilage can be completely painless. I could go back and forth with this kind of research all day, but the messiness of the evidence is the answer. Poor posture probably can hasten joint decay, but it's equally clear that it's not a major factor. What are the emotional risks of poor posture? Poor posture can get us into an emotional rut. This is a more subtle problem, the comfort zone problem. I promised not to spend too much time on this, but it does get a section. It's relatively obvious that posture is shaped by mood and all kinds of other social and emotional factors, but Less well known is that this double-edged sword cuts the other way too. Posture can actually create and reinforce emotional states. There's a nice TED talk about this. Do a Google search for Amy Cuddy, C-U-D-D-Y. Your body language shapes who you are. And that's not all. If posture can change emotions, it's no surprise that it can also change pain sensitivity. So here's an easy science-powered pain relief tip. Stand tall, bold posture, or as a mentor of mine likes to put it, tits up. It will actually reduce pain, a little. A temporary reduction in sensitivity is hardly a cure for chronic pain, but take it anyway. Emotions, posture, and pain sensitivity all influence each other. Most self-limiting behaviors have both postural effects and causes. The classic example is depression. A depressed person will adopt a distinctively depressed posture, which can be quite obvious to everyone around them. Less obviously, the posture actually generates depression. Happy people who try it on will actually start to feel sad. And conversely, sad people who adopt happy postures and expressions will feel better. Cool, eh? Physicality and emotionality are not cleanly distinct. The blending with physicality is interesting, but the emotional dimensions of posture are interesting all by themselves. Above, I define poor posture as an unnecessary and problematic pattern. That pattern may be emotionally problematic. It can both express emotional hang-ups and actually cause and reinforce them. Posture can be a self-limiting behavior, something that actually keeps you in a poor state of mind. We hold ourselves in certain ways because they reflect our comfort with the positions, and our discomfort with other positions, such as holding our head high. Just as we eat comfort food to our detriment, we may also slouch comfortably to our detriment, constantly projecting to the world and creating the reality that we aren't ready, or we're depressed, or sullen, or bored with life, or whatever it may be. When we leave the poor posture unchallenged, we also fail to leave our emotional comfort zone, which is generally necessary for personal growth. I have a whole article on this unusual topic. I call it The Art of Healing by Growing Up, Pain Relief Through the Pursuit of Emotional Intelligence, Life Balance, and Peacefulness. You can get to that at saveyourself.ca, Healing by Growing Up, separated by underscores. Although all of this emotional stuff is a bit flaky and murky, I actually believe that posture's relevance to emotional state and pain sensitivity might be the best reason to experiment with changing posture. Is the goal of good posture to stand up straight, to be aligned? Popular thinking about posture is dominated by the ideas of straightness and alignment. It permeates even guru-level rhetoric about posture. And just the fact that there are posture gurus is rather interesting, isn't it? Why? They are gods of the gaps. God of the gaps is an expression from atheism and skepticism. It refers to the way the idea of gods have always been used to fill in gaps in human knowledge. Whatever we can't explain in the universe is attributed to one god or another. Gurus are like little gods of little gaps in healthcare knowledge. They exploit areas of mystery in life and medicine, selling the appearance of answers in an area where there really aren't many answers, if any. Posture is clearly one of those subjects, therefore there are gurus for it. This isn't always a bad thing. It can be nice to have a thoughtful guide in the wilderness of knowledge, but usually it is a bad thing. Many posture gurus will talk about something like an efficient response to gravity with confidence, which is really just a fancy way of saying straight and aligned. I do not believe that anyone actually knows what an efficient posture is, and it is not necessarily defined only by straightness or precise verticality. We're the only species on planet Earth that routinely stands upright, and there are many reasons to believe that our erectness is actually a biological compromise of questionable value and comfort. Scientists are not sure why we ever stood up in the first place, and there's no evidence today that standing up especially straight is necessarily the way to go, or has any survival benefit, or if it does, that it will necessarily be comfortable. Consider your spine. It is essentially the same spine owned by every mammal in the world, and nearly all of those mammals carry their spine horizontally. So where did we ever get the idea that we should stack our vertebrae on top of one another? There's no obvious sign that our anatomy has significantly or effectively adapted to the upright position. For instance, the connective tissues of our abdomen are still similar to those of the quadrupeds. They're generally suited to holding our guts suspended below a horizontal lumbar spine, not for holding them like a sack tied to a vertical pole. So I reject the stand-up straight definition of good posture. Good posture is not necessarily about straightness, and yet it is essentially the only widely used definition, even by people with supposedly very sophisticated opinions about posture. You may think I'm blowing this guru thing out of proportion, but it's literally true that there have been successful entrepreneurial empires based mainly on trademarking and selling the importance of straightness, and a method of getting there and staying straight. And then there are probably 10 times more successful businesses that may not be devoted to posture straightening in particular, but use it as one of their founding assumptions or marketing bullet points. I'm not saying that we shouldn't stand up straight. I'm just pointing out, again and yet another way, the uncertainties associated with any idea about posture, even this most basic one. There's good reason to doubt anyone who claims to know that good posture is a matter of being well aligned. What is good posture? A definition of good posture is necessarily much less precise than defining a poor posture, because it depends on what you want, and it's essentially impossible to measure success. So here are a couple of almost philosophical suggestions. I'll let Morgan Freeman start this off. I don't know that Morgan Freeman actually said this, and a lot of things attributed to Morgan Freeman are false, but this one's actually plausible because I believe it's an idea from theater. Your best posture is your next posture. And that's a nice way of saying that a good posture is probably dynamic, emphasizing change and movement. Keeping active, frequently changing our posture and experimenting with new ways of moving through the world are probably good responses to the uncertainties of posture. It's in the same spirit as the nutritional advice to eat a varied diet. Most people lead overly sedentary lives and are overly consistent in their limited physical activity. That is, even people active at work, say, are often active only in one way, and they need variety in their movement. More movement, not any particular position, but more positions, is definitely a safe bet and a good start on a good posture. A variety of postural behaviors will also help to strike a balance between the path of least resistance and obsessive and excessive effort, neither lazy nor overzealous. Do not stray too far from your comfort zone, but do not linger there either. Can you change posture? Much of what we perceive as poor posture is the result of biological adaptation over decades, and is unlikely to change without a truly heroic effort, and maybe not even then. In principle, humans can adapt to almost anything. However, the same principle dictates that change is slow and difficult. Wear high heels for many years and your calves will actually shorten, and it's not clear how easily that can be undone. On the other hand, grow up climbing trees like the Twa people of Africa, and you will earn amazingly limber calves that allow your ankles to bend halfway 45 degrees to the shin. That is 2 to 4 times greater than the average urban person. Squatting like a baby is a faddish fitness goal, and hopelessly unrealistic for most people, but if you grow up squatting like the Hadza Bushmen, it's no problem. As Todd Hargrove puts it, not only do these people squat like a baby, they squat better than a baby. Here's a little more from Todd. They maintained all the mobility they had as babies, but added strength, stability, and skill. They never stretch, never do yoga or Pilates, never engage in any corrective exercise, yet they all move effortlessly in and out of positions that most Westerners cannot even get into. Which sounds great, but don't think for a minute that the Twa and the Hadza don't have their own costs and consequences for the stresses that they've adapted so beautifully to. Everything in biology involves trade-offs. Many adaptations are almost certainly irreversible, or so difficult that they might as well be. A child can adapt in ways that are possible only in the plasticity of a rapidly growing body, and for the adult to try to undo it is like trying to straighten wood that was once artfully bent with steam. Other changes may occur only over vast spans of time, or because of variables that we have little or no control over. The result is that some adult postures are simply impossible to change. We really do get locked in. And the result stops being a choice or a behavior, and is simply something that we're stuck with. And yet, we can change. Stretch actually can increase flexibility, with a lot of work, more on this below, for whatever it's worth. For the office worker who feels locked into a typist's hunch, and I know I feel locked into a typist's hunch as I type this and read it, isn't it worth at least trying to break out? Is the near futility of it all the more reason to at least make the effort? Perhaps it is. Should you try to change your posture? There's no basis for shoulding when it comes to posture. If the only reason you want to change your posture is on principle, I don't recommend it. It's not worth the trouble. You are not a good candidate for this process. There are probably 100 more useful things that you could do with your time. The cure can also turn out to be worse than the disease. A bad postural habit is not unlike an addiction. Trying to live with better posture may cause more problems or be more uncomfortable than whatever it was that drove you to try to improve your posture in the first place. In a short article for The Guardian, Oliver Berkman describes what it was like to switch to a special chair that, quote, resembles a saddle, so instead of slouching, you perch, or that's the idea. In reality, it's just rather uncomfortable. After 40 minutes, it's extremely uncomfortable. Change and challenge can be uncomfortable, and the payoff is uncertain. If Mr. Berkman were to keep that up constantly for a decade, he might toughen up and be a better man for it. Or he might find it a wearisome strain with no clear point. Hard to call. However, if you are driven to the idea of postural transformation because of aches and pains, you might be quite motivated by the hope of a partial solution, and the side effects of challenging new habits may be more worthwhile. You should probably try it, and keep it up for a while to give it an adequate chance, or even just for the sake of experiment. Try to stay interested in the challenge for at least a month. Watch and wait patiently for new developments. It took me a good 6 months to learn how to stop sleeping face down, but now I can't imagine going back. People who quit trying to change their posture after a week, or even after a month, have not learned much, except that they aren't very good at it. So be persistent and give it a fair chance, and then if the first honest attempt doesn't work, give up. What if you give postural change a fair chance and there are no obvious benefits? What if you can't really tell if you've achieved anything? What if you still seem to be crooked? Or what if you look straighter in the mirror, but it makes no difference to how you feel? Definitely give up. I'm all for trying anything once, and I think postural exercise is worth a shot if you think it might be connected to a pain problem. However, if a reasonable effort fails, I do not recommend a repeat performance. Once again, there are many better things that you can do with your time, not just better things in general, but better things that you can do to try to solve a pain problem. There are simply too many problems, too many questions about posture's relevance to pain. It's worth trying to work with posture, but it's not worth trying a lot. Part 2. How do you improve posture? In the rest of the article, I'll review some approaches to improving posture, mostly defined as increasing postural fitness. Whatever your approach, I recommend choosing clear functional goals and or solving specific problems. Rather than shooting for good posture, think in terms of postural fitness and ask yourself, what do you want to be posturally fit for? The example of flexibility is instructive. Many people have a stretching habit with the specific goal of being more flexible, but they literally can't explain why they need to be more flexible. Or if they do, the need is trumped up, even ridiculous. Athletes especially tend to exaggerate their need for flexibility. Most people don't need to be more than a tiny bit more flexible than they already are, if that. Similarly, most people do not need to be posturally fit for activities that they will never actually do. You don't need to be able to balance on a tightrope unless you plan to work for a circus. Choose goals that make sense for you. In general, goals for postural fitness are almost indistinguishable from general fitness. The seemingly technical challenge of changing postural habits is nothing of the sort. It's almost entirely in the realm of art and faith, not science. Measures of success are primarily subjective. I've witnessed and personally tried many tactics for changing postural habits. There are no rules, no system to which you should devote your life, no right way to do it. But there probably is a wrong way. Improving posture by force of will. Trying to force yourself to earnestly sit or stand up straight is so ineffective and pointless that I wouldn't even bring it up, except that it's actually the default approach. This is what most people do. When people decide that they really need to work on their posture, they usually don't have any clear idea what they intend to do. Most people who worry about their posture go through episodes of trying in no particular way, just mentally straining until their discipline fades. Posture is the product of spinal reflexes and additional tweaking by your brain, all of which occurs as it must without the involvement of conscious attention. While you can always exert conscious control over your posture, you will always revert to the unconscious and reflex-controlled pattern the second your mind wanders. Consciousness is really just a thin scum on top of everything else that the brain does. If you're disciplined enough, you can sustain posture long enough that the habitual unconscious behavior begins to change. But such discipline may have a price that not many people want to pay. To the extent that this approach ever succeeds, it tends to produce rigid, artificial postures, a caricature of posture, an imitation of good posture. Address major systemic barriers to success. Some problems will make it particularly difficult to improve your posture. It's a good idea to try to solve those first, if you can. Obviously, in many cases, it won't be easy or even possible. Here's four good examples. Fatigue, pain, mood disorders, and a job with significant postural strain. We'll go back over those in a little more detail. First, fatigue, especially from insomnia. Most insomnia is behavioral and treatable, even if it seems extremely severe and stubborn. I speak from painful personal experience. Treating insomnia is the highest priority for this challenge, and practically all others. You can read a lot more about insomnia on saveyourself.ca. Just add /insomnia. Pain, especially if it is actually caused by poor posture, is a major barrier to success. A lot of unexplained and chronic body pain is untreatable, but some is. Common muscle pain is unpredictable, but often responds to nearly any kind of fresh sensory input, like massage or stretching. So it's certainly worth trying to address common aches and pains in this way before trying to improve posture. Mood disorders are a major barrier to postural change. I'm not a mental health professional, and this is not the place to recommend any solutions for those problems. However, I have recovered myself and stayed recovered from severe depression back in my 20s, many years now that I've been completely free of that. So I can at least say with confidence that it is possible and relevant. A job with significant postural strain. By no means should everyone with a physically demanding job quit so that they can work on their posture. However, if you believe posture is an important issue for you and you have a job that challenges your posture in an unhealthy way, then you should certainly consider a change. People have changed jobs for less. Doubtless there are other examples, but you get the idea. Make working on posture easier. Imagine how hard it would be for someone with all of these problems, a tired, hurt, and depressed person with a job leaning over a conveyor belt for several hours per day is probably going to have a really hard time changing postures. Visualize, dramatize, and role play. That might sound pretty weird to a lot of people. Okay, it is kind of weird. But you don't have to be obvious about it. No one has to know that you're dramatizing anything. For instance, if you find it hard to lift your chest, lift your heart instead. Walk down the street pretending to be 3 times more confident than you are. Act as if. And watch what happens to your chest. If your back is uncomfortably curved, maybe in excessive lordosis, then walk like a dinosaur. Pretend you have an enormous, heavy, swaying tail as you walk. And so on. Todd Hargrove of BetterMovement.org writes, "It's usually quite obvious to people that changing their thoughts might be a good way to change their mood. For example, people might try to combat sadness or depression by thinking happy thoughts. Another possible approach would be to move happy moves." I love that phrase, move happy moves. Perfect. Trigger self-awareness with reminders. Interrupt or remind yourself to pay attention to your goal using timers and buzzers or whatever works. This can be very useful for increasing body awareness. Similar tricks can be played with signs, alarms, or oddly placed objects around your home or office. This might seem suspiciously similar to trying to improve your posture by force of will, but this suggestion here is more just about triggering self-awareness of a specific issue. For instance, if your specific postural goal is to reduce headache frequency and severity by breaking a bad habit of sitting on the edge of your chair and leaning in far too close to a computer screen, then it might be useful to remind yourself frequently about the problem. Practice makes perfect. Spend deliberate time in a different posture. Some people will relate best to an exercise ritual. Strive for your goal repeatedly or continuously until it gets easier. Repetition is required for most kinds of learning. It might be useful to slightly exaggerate as well. If you want to carry your head further back, then go for a half-hour walk every day and practice keeping your head in the right place, or even further back than that. Don't worry about practicing the rest of the time, any more than you would learn guitar by carrying it around with you at all times and strumming every time you can think of it. Just set up a conscious, well-defined practice time. Use props and tools. Physical assistance can sometimes force the issue effectively. For instance, I don't think I would ever have learned to sleep on my side without the help of a pillow. To this day, I still need a pillow in my way to prevent me from rolling onto my stomach. Obviously, there's no limit to the creative possibilities here. Improving posture by taping. If you have a specific postural challenge, such as a tendency to thrust your head forward at the computer, taping might offer you the best effort-to-reward ratio. Taping yourself into the desired posture can accomplish the same thing as discipline without the force of will. Simply apply medical tape, available in any drugstore such as you would find in a first aid kit, applied to the skin in such a way that it becomes impossible to position yourself incorrectly. For instance, in the case of head protraction, that's putting the head forward, pull the head backwards and apply a length of tape along the spine from the hairline to between the shoulder blades. The moment you try to move your head forward, you'll get a nasty yank on your skin. No discipline required. Taping is an irritating but highly effective method of forcing your postural reflexes to adapt. It's useless for more general or subtle postural degeneracy, however. Aversion therapy. Make the wrong things less appealing. Many of the suggestions so far are just various ways of trying to create a new normal state or adjusting your defaults, as Jon Kabat-Zinn put it. Earlier I mentioned Oliver Berkman's experiment with a chair that he perched on and how it was extremely uncomfortable, his words. But then he describes an interesting change. Now I don't sit for too long because it's simply no fun to do. After a few weeks, I realized that something intriguing had happened. I'd switched my default state. Standing or strolling was now my automatic baseline behavior. Sitting was something I actively did. So, is being forced to avoid an uncomfortable chair a victory? A lasting one? Or will Mr. Berkman revert sooner or later to comfier furniture? My money's on reversion. I'm doubtful that his defaults have truly been adjusted, which is pretty clearly just another way of talking about breaking old habits and forming new ones, no more or less profound or reliable than resolutions made around January 1st. Nevertheless, it's an interesting way of trying to change your posture, or any bad habit, and probably as good as any other. Stretching to improve posture. It's a popular notion, a really popular notion, that poor posture is caused by tight muscles pulling on our skeletons unevenly, like pathological ship's rigging. I recall an elaborate demonstration of this principle in massage therapy college. An instructor tied several strings to me to simulate muscles, and pulled on them in various patterns to show how tightness could warp my posture. The demonstration wasn't memorable for the reason that he would have liked. It was a ridiculous oversimplification to make a pointless point. The demonstration was not contrived to illustrate anything that's actually known in biology and kinesiology. It was just a dramatization of a trumped-up self-serving justification for doing massage therapy and stretching. Undoubtedly, the best-known specific form of this idea is that tight hamstrings cause bad posture, and therefore stretching will fix your posture. This was specifically tested in a 2012 experiment. I'm afraid it didn't work. Although hamstring extensibility was indeed improved by a fairly ordinary stretching program, it had no effect on posture. The results are probably all the more believable because I strongly suspect the researchers were really hoping to prove that stretching hamstrings is good for posture, and researchers are remarkably good at finding what they hope to find. But it seems the data was just not there to exaggerate or distort. It would be difficult to find another muscle to stretch with more potential than the hamstring example. If stretching hamstrings has no effect on posture, I doubt any other kind of stretching does either. So this is a dead end, and yet another of many examples of how stretching works only in the sense that it will make you a little more flexible, temporarily. But the value of that flexibility is dubious indeed. For many other examples, I'll refer you again to my stretching article, the main one, saveyourself.ca/stretching. Improve posture with general activity. If force of will is the worst way to improve posture, being generally physically active in a variety of ways is probably the best. Not only somewhat effective, but a good idea for many other reasons too, of course. And that's really the main thing. Even if this doesn't work for posture, you're still going to get some benefit out of it. A sedentary lifestyle contributes significantly to the degeneration of postural reflexes. NASA famously discovered this while studying the physiological effects of inactivity. Use it or lose it is the unsurprising biological lesson here. Organisms adapt quickly to stimuli and stresses and atrophy quickly without them. Therefore, probably the simplest cure for eroded postural reflexes is simply to do more with your body, but nothing in particular. While it might make sense to choose activities that are specifically challenging to your posture, and you can certainly do that if you choose, see the next section, the spirit of this suggestion is that you can probably get decent bang for your buck without focusing on posture-challenging activities, but just by doing anything you like, salsa dancing, swimming, golf, whatever. A physical challenge like paddling, dragon boating for instance, forces you to learn how to use your upper body very differently. The risk is that you will simply take postural dysfunction into the new activity, but the great potential benefit is that the enthusiasm you feel for the new activity will magically inspire new habits. Many people have permanently broken old habits just by taking up an exciting new activity that required being different to enjoy or succeed at. Inspiration, not discipline. Add some instability to your life. Improve posture by challenging it. Add some instability, that is, manageable postural challenges, to your activities, even otherwise sedentary activities. For instance, sit on an exercise ball or a wobble cushion. A wobble cushion is a funny little balloon pillow that creates an unstable surface to sit on. Sit on an exercise ball or a wobble cushion instead of a chair while working at the computer. That's adding instability. Buy a wobble board and stand on it while you watch television. If you're lucky enough to live near a beach, walk on the sand. Sand walking and running are particularly exhausting to the postural muscles. Go have a run on the beach and see how sore you are the next day, assuming you don't normally do it. Many exercise activities are more obviously challenging to posture than others. Where else but in a yoga class are you going to be asked to stand on one leg? Pilates, Tai Chi, dance, martial arts, even a general fitness class, all can specifically demand coordination and stability not ordinarily present in your life. Improving posture through ergonomics and eliminating postural strains. Ergonomics is the science of arranging or designing things for efficient use. Poor ergonomics not only creates direct postural strain challenges, such as reaching too high for a computer mouse, but may also force people to learn bad new habits in order to cope. Computers have made slouchers out of a lot of people. Extremely poor ergonomic design is usually obvious, but there are many more subtle cases as well. Improving the ergonomic design of your office or home could be simple, but not every solution may be practical or affordable. For example, I frequently recommend that my clients invest in a headset for the phone, so that you don't have to cradle it with a tilted neck. That's technology that has only become effective and affordable for consumers in the last few years, and so many people have never even considered that solution. When you're upgrading your ergonomics, try to think outside the box, and don't just pick the low-hanging fruit. The best changes may require some hassle and/or expense. I've often seen patients complain bitterly about their office chairs. Being prone to aches and pains, I can't imagine why anyone would put up with a really bad chair for more than about 3 days. Either the boss agrees to get you a new chair or you go buy your own. But people balk at asking and balk at the expense. Talk about penny-wise and pound-stupid. It's your back. If it's being relentlessly irritated by a chair at work, change the chair. Period. Whatever it takes. Discussions about ergonomics routinely overlook the fact that the long work days in a chair are just a fundamentally bad idea, no matter how good your chair is. Ergonomics should not be focused on ways of making people more comfortable with a bad situation, which is almost a conspiracy against workers, but rather on improving the situation. Conventional ergonomics, when arranging things for efficient use, tends to exclude the most important thing in the equation, you. The consequences of ergonomics that ignore you range from the irritating to the traumatic. If you look at this article on the website, I have a fascinating collection of videos and ergonomic disasters that I link to. For some ideas about arranging a few things other than your workstation, see my article Unconventional Ergonomics at saveyourself.ca/ergonomics. Case study of a bad example. This section used to be a critical analysis of a specific trademarked method and the theories of its founder, which I bought into for a while early in my career. However, his method has not thrived, and I'm not sure he's even in the guru business anymore, so I've stripped out the specifics and made it into a more anonymous generic example, a bad example. Methods like this are a dime a dozen. Let's call it the Posture Modification System, PMS. PMS makes claims that do not have a sound scientific basis and can't be made with the confidence that the would-be guru made them. For instance, his website advertised that PMS expands the fundamental concepts of physics, language that is irrelevant to therapy, grandiose, and melodramatically overconfident. The big idea of PMS is that a deviation from an erect posture can be corrected by exercising in the plane perpendicular to the deviation. That was his words. In theory, the body knows that a movement in one plane, say flapping the arms up and down, can't be performed efficiently if you're leaning forward or backward. Hence, every flap of the arms tends to stimulate the reflex that pulls you upright. It's a kind of a clever notion, but it's just a notion, completely devoid of evidence. And applying the principle is not straightforward. To use it, you would need the assistance of the founder himself or a practitioner certified in the technique, and there were never many of them, I don't think. You would have had to have invested considerable time, money, and energy, and all based on the self-serving say-so of an aspiring posture guru. I remember the founder asking a group of workshop participants whether his technique was working for them. Less than half the participants raised their hands. The guru, however, ignored the mediocre response and proceeded as though all of us had raised our hands, proving his point. Self-serving cognitive distortions don't get much more obvious than that was. I'm embarrassed to admit that for several years I taught a simplified version of PMS to my own clients. I was not always a good critical thinker in those days. It's something that I've learned over the years, in part from this experience. Eventually I abandoned PMS due to its fussiness and inconsistent results. Its failure to impress me was one of the major early causes of my disillusionment with both structuralism and modality empires. This combination of extreme scientific uncertainty with significant practical difficulties with implementation is a really good example of why systems for postural correction are so generally dubious. Conclusions. Posture is almost certainly associated with some pain problems, but much more weakly than most people believe. Postural habits with clear consequences and easy fixes are pretty much unheard of. Much of so-called poor posture is actually just postural strain and bad ergonomics, not really a postural problem at all. Many people seem to be unusually vulnerable to poor postures and postural strain, but these people also may not have a posture problem, but a pain problem. And many more elements of poor posture are probably the result of long-term biological adaptation that's either extremely difficult or impossible to change. About the only clear benefit to tinkering with posture is that it can affect mood, emotion, and probably pain sensitivity. So, trying to change posture is probably not worthwhile for most people most of the time. If you want to try it and see, your best bet is probably increased activity, especially with tasks that require coordination, and especially anything you enjoy, an activity that inspires rather than requiring discipline. Ergonomic tuning may also be particularly helpful, especially with specific challenges. Technical and advanced methods taught by posture gurus are generally more or less wildly speculative and completely untested scientifically. Stay away from those.